What does it really take to scale your law firm without burning out or backing down? Welcome to the Summer Success Series of the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. This is a power-packed roundup of our most downloaded episodes from the first half of 2025. So whether you're new here or you're one of our trusted followers, these are the conversations that high-performing law firm owners couldn't stop talking about. From sealing up intake leaks to scaling with AI, these are the exact strategies our clients are using to unlock profit, reclaim time, and lead with clarity. So while you're recharging, power up with the insights that are already driving serious results. The systems, the freedom, the empire. Let's finish 2025 stronger, smarter, and more unapologetic than ever.
Hey, it's Sam Alai here, founder of My Legal Academy, where we help lawyers scale and automate their law firms so they could sign up more clients and reclaim their precious time. If you're looking to grow your practice while working less, click the link in the show notes to book a free call to discover a radically different way to grow your law firm. Enjoy the episode.
We are live, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Today, we are talking to Steve Fredson. Steve, you want to give a little short intro about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I appreciate it. I'm Steve Fredson. I'm the owner, president of Fredson Inc. and also the host of the Be That Lawyer with Fredson podcast. What I do is I work all over the world helping lawyers to dramatically grow their law practices, not through marketing, but really through business development. Actually, your time and effort being put out there to develop relationships and bring in new business. And I just love it. I'm not a lawyer, but I've been in legal for a very long time and exclusive. And it's been nothing but a pleasure dealing with lawyers. I work with the nicest, smartest people in the world.
Amazing. Steve, you have a really good perspective with where you are with helping lawyers. What's the number one mistake that law firm owners make that holds them back from getting to the next level?
I think it's really understanding that you need to be a student of the business of law. There's the law and then there's the business of law. And I think they get to know the practice of law very well and they become great lawyers, hopefully. But then there's this whole other piece that they don't learn in law school. That could be how to run a business. That could be the business development, the marketing. But whatever it might be, there's so much great content that you've created, I've created, that's available for people to really understand the business side of it. And I think you have to just start to realize, look, I need an MBA reading and video and audio of how to actually run a successful law practice or law firm. And that's kind of the biggest misstep, is just not investing time and energy and money into that side of the law.
And usually what's the first step for that? Somebody who feels like what you just shared, what do you suggest is the first step to get out of that?
I would say just like start picking up some books about, if it's time management that you want to really get a handle on, because you know that's the beast that has to be wrangled before you can get to the other stuff. Like, I got a funny story. My grandfather, when he was alive, I got a call from the library. They said, "Hey, Mr. Fredson, you didn't return this book." He goes, "Yeah, I did. I always return the books." And he said, "Well, what's the name of the book?" And they said, "It's How to Improve Your Memory." Right? So he had forgotten. No, it makes sense. And so like, we are all based on, you know, money is time and time is money. And yet we're not learning how to manage our time. So then we're not really managing our money. And so I think that might be a great place to start, because that may allow you access to open up gaps of time to then focus on the business of law, business development, marketing, and scaling and leadership and all the things that accompany where most lawyers, I think, want to go.
And what's one book that you think has been the most transformational for your clients?
I would say Getting Things Done by David Allen. That book is, you know, all right, you have all this stuff coming into your head. What do you do with it? How do you, you know, I've been at a zero inbox for 17 years. I don't know anybody else that has a zero inbox at the end of every day for 17 years. I don't have a scrap of paper on my desk or near me. Everything is done through my Remarkable 2. Everything is through my CRM. It's just everything's digital and backed up in the cloud. And so I think there's ways to get organized. And that book, it was instrumental for me to really get, because I'm just like a build like a feather on the wind, Sam. I just float any way the wind blows. And I just knew that I was never going to be successful running a business if I didn't get a handle on the time.
What are the top tools that you currently use on a daily basis that are like instrumental to what you do?
I would say scheduling is really critical. I'm scheduling client meetings, prospect meetings, marketing meetings, all. I mean, my schedule's full, but I don't go back and forth ever with anyone. It's one and done. Here's my link to get a meeting with me. Go into my calendar, find a time, get it scheduled out. I think folks that are trying to do the whole back and forth all day with hundreds of people are missing the boat on one major efficiency that they should have. Another would be something called Boomerang, which attaches to my Gmail and Outlook. So essentially, when I send an email and I know I want that person to respond by a certain amount of time, I Boomerang it, click a button so that in a week when they don't respond, it goes to the top of my inbox and I can send a follow-up email, which is all set up in my draft. So I don't have to write the email. It's all set up in drafts. So I'm really leveraging the technology that is in front of me to improve efficiencies, especially with mundane things that you do over and over and over.
Amazing. In your program, but what's the general like main parts of it? Like what percentage is it mindset? What percentage is it tools? What percentage of it could be other assortment of things? Like what are the overarching kind of pillars in your program?
There's so many ways I can describe what I'm doing and how it works, but I'm going to break it up into three parts that I think are really helpful. And again, I would put this out there for anyone to say, if you want to be highly successful in something, these are the three parts that it takes, whether it's you want to be a great guitar player like Neil, or you want to be a great chef, or you want to be a great athlete. I think there has to be some planning elements. You can't just wing it and go out there and hope for the best. You need to have a plan of how you're going to approach things and how you're going to be successful. That can be all tracked and measured. And so like if I have a client go out on 10 meetings and there's no next steps and there's no, you know, whatever, I want to make sure that we have a plan that allows for changes, and tracking is a part of that to make the appropriate changes to the plan. The second piece is process. I think you need to have processes. I'm giving lawyers processes for networking, processes for writing an infomercial, processes for how you walk a buyer through a buying decision without doing free consulting or giving away your information for, you know, rates, things like that, way early in the meeting. So there's processes that can be learned and followed, similar to what you talk about, Sam, which is, you know, you have to have systems. So there are systems for business development, and most lawyers don't know what they are. And then the last piece I would call performance improvement. So you have a system, you're following it, and you realize something in that system isn't working the way you want it to. We need to be in a position to look at it under a microscope, make an improvement to that performance of that particular system, and get it back on track working. So for example, if I go to a driving range and I slice 5 balls to the right, I need to have some way to say, all right, there's 3 reasons this is happening. It's my grip, it's my stance, I'm lifting my head. I fix those 3 things, then I hit 5 down the middle, and that would be sort of like a performance improvement. Practice makes perfect isn't the case. It's perfect practice makes perfect. Thanks to our friend Vince Lombardi, the late, great Vince Lombardi. So these are the kinds of things that are going to make a big difference in how someone is successful: planning, process, and performance improvement.
And how do you share your processes? Somebody who has a blank slate, now how do you take what you have, your formula, and then pass it off to them?
I actually, it's funny, I talk about this quite a bit. Like, I love working with lawyers. And one of the reasons in my past is working with entrepreneurs and salespeople. It was like a whiteboard that had scribbles all over it. And for them to work with me and learn my system, I had to erase everything first, all that negative, you know, mindset, head trash, past systems that are outdated, that they were taught by, you know, Brian Tracy back in the 80s, whatever it might be, you know, shout out to Brian Tracy. Okay, that's cool. But ultimately with lawyers, they have nothing on the whiteboard. It's a clean slate. So when I talk to them about my main model revolves around something called sales-free selling. The idea is that I hate selling, I hate being sold to, and so do lawyers. So why are we still doing it? Why are we going on pitch meetings? Why is that term pitch even being mentioned? It's because they don't know that there's a better model. They don't know that there's a way to do it where it's built around relationships and questioning and qualifying and identifying the best fit, and to do it all around the prospective client's life and state and needs. And it has very little to do with me as the lawyer selling anything. And so I think lawyers really love the idea that they can learn a system that doesn't say, hey, go out and convince and sell and pitch. It's around relationships and trust and questioning and things that are going to make them feel really warm and fuzzy, not icky.
And do you help out with helping lawyers figure out their KPIs or tracking any of that assortment?
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, there's a difference between marketing and business development. And I leave the marketing to the experts like you, Sam. So if it's pay-per-click and it's looking at average cost of this, average cost of that to get lead in, and what is the conversion rate? We talk about it a little bit. Mostly what we're saying is, look, you know, there's so many clients that you need to get from a half a million to a million or a million to 2 million. So we're looking at numbers like that on the growth side. We're also looking at, hey, what's your overhead and what are your costs? And you know, many of the clients I work with are at firms, so they're not really dealing too much with the cost side. They just need to grow their originations and build their book of business at the firm that where they live. And for the solos and the small firms, they just want to get from a million to two and two to four and things like that. So really what we're looking at is, how are they spending their time? What is the lowest hanging fruit to go after business in the least amount of time with the greatest return from a business development standpoint, not marketing standpoint? I want them to do marketing too, but I'm really focused as the business development person. And if all they need to do is social media ads to get all the business they'll ever need, they still need to intake and close them. But you know, that's where I can help them. But if that's all they need, then I'm not going to be giving too much advice, because it's the lawyers that should be putting their effort and time on the field, building relationships and drawing in referrals and building a law practice around strategic alliances and partnerships and client referrals. That's really my home and where I tend to hang out.
Steve, there's a big phenomenon with, it's not how much money you make, it's about how much money you keep. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of your clients deal with this situation. You know, a law firm owner comes, they make $300,000, but they also spend $280,000. What's the first thing that you do with them to solve that problem?
Yeah, we need to look at the P&L. We need to look at the overhead. We have to look at their rates. We have to look at their staff. You know, where's the money going out and where's the money coming in and where's the disconnect? Are they paying themselves, you know, and how much? And so there's just so much dysfunction with lack of processes or lack of attention to where the money, like I was talking to someone the other day and, you know, if you look at the gross numbers, you go, amazing. And then when you look at what the profit is, you go, what? How is that possible? And it's because they're not running it like a business. They're running it like it's a bank account. And they're just like, I need this money and I need that money. And I'm going to random acts of marketing. I'm going to spend $50,000 on this or $20,000 on that. And there's no rhyme or reason. And so you see how fast the money can exit that bank account when there isn't a plan and there isn't a strategy and they don't have advisors like you and I in their corner to really say, hey, you know, are you getting feedback from your SEO company on the $3,000 a month that you're actually getting business and that you're moving up in Google? And if so, what is that relating to how much business you're getting? Well, no, we're just kind of waiting for it to kind of happen at some point. Well, okay, no, I don't think so. I think we need to make some tough decisions about where to invest, and sometimes cutting costs is the best way to profit.
In regards to that, what do you see as the biggest waste for law firms?
I would say probably in staff that isn't functioning properly. They're overpaying people that aren't doing their jobs. And so people are the problem in many cases. And so, you know, slow to hire, quick to fire, and really identifying, you know, how much you're spending and on whom and what are they producing. I mean, Sam, you helped me figure it out, but like, what should an associate be bringing in? What should be the X on an associate? And is that number there? Or is they basically, you know, making what they pay, like what you pay them is kind of what they're bringing in. What's being expended?
Yeah. I would try to probably look at, you know, what's the value they're providing first? You know, the cost of it is secondary for me. It's always like to look to see what's the value first. Sometimes even higher cost could be usually is a higher value. So I try to value based on the value. And then from there to see how we can incentivize growth and performance from that team member. And then if we cannot do that, then at that point, it will be optimization, elimination, or, you know, adjustment of their role with potentially sometimes multiple virtual assistants and, you know, that whole kind of game. But you also see the biggest opportunity, right? You just say we cut the fat. What do you see is the easiest low-hanging fruit that most law firm owners can utilize?
Yeah. So what I do is I meet with lawyers for 30 minutes. I ask them a tremendous amount of questions. And what I find out with most of those meetings is that there's a table standing right in front of the lawyer, piled with money up to the ceiling. And they're walking around it pretty much all day. And it's mainly because, again, they don't have a system, a process, or something that they can feel comfortable executing because they're an introvert or because it's new or because they're a perfectionist or because they're just scared of what it means to ask a client for an introduction, a GC that loves you and thinks you're the greatest lawyer they've ever worked with, and you're afraid to ask the GC, who are some other GCs that I should be talking to like you? You're the perfect client for me. Who else should I be talking to that I could do similar work for? And the GC goes, oh, I got a half a dozen of those I could probably get you in front of. I can't believe you haven't asked me already. And then the lawyer goes like this and goes, oh my God, it's been 10 years I've been working with this person. I never asked the question. I could have doubled or tripled my book if I had just had the moxie and some thought about where that low-hanging fruit is. So client quality introductions, cross-marketing, development of strategic partnerships that can float you 3, 4, 5, 10 deals a year, how you communicate and keep in touch with past clients, stay top of mind. I mean, there's a bunch of things that I identify, but usually when I get done talking with a prospective client, I have between 5 and 8 things that I've already picked up that they're not doing that they should be doing. And I don't solve it for them because it's not something to be solved in the moment, but it's something to say, hey, there's a lot of opportunity here and we should keep talking.
Amazing. In our show, we always focus on the future and early adoption, kind of leaning in to all those early adoption kind of strategies, taking advantage of it, being aggressive on it as much as possible until the market catches up. So Steve, what does the future of law look like to you? You can define that as best as you could. And then what are some overall trends that you see that we're leading in, being led into?
Yeah, I think, you know, we can look at a couple different angles. Obviously, you know a lot more than me about AI, but, you know, a lot of the jobs that are the medial repetitive jobs that lawyers are doing right now and getting paid a lot of money for, they're going away. So we need to think about what is going to be the high level brain work, that problem solving that AI isn't going to handle and isn't going to catch up for quite a while on that. What areas are going away? And how do we take a dive into AI now to start getting comfortable with it so that when it advances and continues, that we're a part of it, we're not figuring it out, you know, 5 years from now when everyone's on it but me. Okay, so that's one thing. Another is we have to keep in mind how competitive the landscape is and is getting. The world is flat. People are starting law firms like you do virtually. You're not competing with just the person in the office, you know, around town. It's going to be people from around the world that are going to be competing with you. Not to mention the fact that many states have gone to a non-lawyer based ownership, which means, you know, Google and Amazon and all these big corporations can start buying up firms, or I could start working at firms in Nevada and whatever, and I'll be taking quite a bit of business away from other people. Or, you know, you're obviously working with, you know, running a bunch of firms. And how do we compete as, you know, against you, the master of marketing and social media marketing? You know, good luck. You know, it's going to be quite difficult. So I think lawyers more now than ever need to get their act together on the business side, going back to the beginning, and start to think about the future and how they can get their piece of it now and in the next number of years before things start to shake out and get significantly worse or more challenging.
Steve, if you could gather up all your clients and all your prospects and your entire audience, and you give them one top of mind, shaking the tree kind of thing that you could share with them, what would be that lesson?
I mean, I don't want to be repetitive, but I have a hard time not being, and that is, look, you didn't go to law school to, you know, to become a business person. You wanted to go and learn the law, a very noble industry, a very noble profession. The reality is, whether you're at a big firm or solo or anything in between, you have to start becoming a student of the game of the business of law. I don't care what it is. I work with big firm attorneys that are dealing with major matters and big books, and they need to figure out how to leverage their role in that firm and their brand as an individual away from the firm brand and figure out how to continue to grow and be sustainable. Because if somebody that is feeding you work dies, your firm gets bought, your firm starts, you know, lowering the hours, a recession happens, everything is at risk. Your entire career is at risk. Similar to when I got started in 2008 with the recession, that's one of the reasons I got into working with legal, because lawyers were losing jobs, GC roles were getting slimmed down, hours were being cut, and they didn't know what to do. And it's like they didn't learn any lessons between 2008 and today. other than the lawyers that, you know, reach out to me and that are really getting the idea of you got to step up and you got to start learning the other part of the law.
And what better people to learn from than from Steve? Steve, if people want to reach out, how could they reach out? And also, if you want to give a special shout out to your own podcast show as well.
Yeah, appreciate that. So fretzin.com, F-R-E-T-Z-I-N is my website. I'm all over LinkedIn. I'm writing for Above the Law, the Be That Lawyer podcast. I'm coming up with my fifth book that will be announced in the next couple months. I think, Sam, you might be in that book. We'll see. I think it's a happening situation. And just really, you know, again, I'm putting out a ton of content for a reason. I'm not going to work with every lawyer in the world, but I do want to change the industry. I do want to be someone who leaves the industry better than I found it via the content I'm creating and the words that I'm sharing to everyone out there listening that, you know, you get one shot at this thing and you want to make the best of it. So don't sit back and just fill hours. Think about the other parts of it. And I know. That'll help you live a happier life, more sustainable career, and take care of your family properly.
Amazing. One last question, Steve. Do you go to any conferences?
I don't really go to conferences. I'll go to the tech show in Chicago because it's local. And then if I'm invited to be like a speaker at a conference, then I would go. But typically, I'm not going to a lot of conferences. If I'm being honest, I have a line of people out the door that want to work with me, and I'm just trying to find the best clients that I can work with. So I'm a one-man operation. I'm not scaling like you do, but I just want the right, highly motivated clients. And so, but I think that conferences are great. I do teach lawyers how to work a conference because many of them find they go and they don't get much out of it. And I think it's a big misstep. So, but I do enjoy the ones that I do get to see. What conferences do you go to?
I usually also stay away because time is limited and I just like staying close to home. But this year might be my most conference-prone. This year, most likely, we're going to ClickFunnels conference, which is not a lawyer conference, but I highly recommend lawyers to go to non-lawyer conferences because I think there's actually bigger opportunities to go to those. So that's one. There's also LeadCon, also another non-lawyer conference, which is all about generating leads and clients. That's later in April. And then I went to ABA Tech Show last year. Never been to ClioCon and never been to the other ones. But Steve, what's one conference that either you attended or you heard that you recommend that lawyers should go to?
Well, for the personal injury folks that really want a top-notch show, I'm going to put a shout out to my friend Chris Dreyer at PIMCON. I think that nobody puts on a better show, a higher level, and a better experience than Chris does. So check out PIMCON with Chris Dreyer. I think that's the one I would put a shout out to.
I attested that too. I saw the videos. It looked amazing, especially for his first time. I think the first time you do anything, you always go all out, especially your conference. We had our own conference about a year and a half ago too, and we went all out. It was very hard to top that amazing experience. So a special shout out to Chris. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate you. And I'll leave all the links to reach out to Steve right below. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.